Let me add, I'm not sleeping this morning, but we've dealt with hiking shoes. It's a journey following Jesus. We've dealt with formal shoes, that there are disciplines, there are times when we need to have routines that carry us through. Today, these are mine, and we're going to be talking about servant foot, my work boots. And this morning, this is the only session I think where we have particularly directed two core team members to speak on the subject. There's been a matter of discussion with the others. But today, Carol and David are going to speak about discipleship is serving. The reason that we've asked them to speak on that is that above most people that I know, many people in Day Spring serve. In fact, that's one of the characteristics of the church. We wouldn't survive if you weren't a serving community. But in different ways, both David and Carol have shown themselves to be people who not only have a gift of serving, and I would argue that one of the two of them probably doesn't have a gift of serving, but in terms of a ministry of serving, in terms of a servanthood of serving, I'll explain that in a minute. I thought, shall I show that? They're both people who are excellent. I remember the time, years and years ago, when Carol came to me and said, I want to get involved. And from that point onwards, the assumption has been, on her part, that if you ask her to do something, whether or not it's within her area of competence or of inclination, she's done it. And I think that is the characteristic of servanthood. It's not doing a lot of what we're good at or what we enjoy. It's being willing to do it because the need is there. And of course we know that the key characteristic of discipleship is actually servanthood. And then getting to know David, to find somebody who, right from our initial conversation, almost the first time I met him, said, don't be stuck with the impression that I want to be a businessman. You know, I want to be a church administrator. I want to serve. And sure enough, over time, I think he actually took a 50% cut in salary when he joined us. And David's been there. And I notice that time and time again, David takes up the slack. And of course that's been a characteristic too with Carol. When it's children's work, somebody who doesn't consider herself to be a children's worker, did children's work. Just recently this autumn, said to Carol, look Carol, we're going to need you to hold together the team's work. Okay, I'll do that. And Carol would argue that because professionally she's involved with young people all the time, that it's better if she doesn't. But she's doing an excellent job there. And those of you who are parents who knew her taking the kids away for that weekend will know that that certainly blesses the young people as well. What I mean by this about a gift is if you actually look at the gift profiles for what they're worth, Carol's gifts are not in the area of serving, primarily in teaching. Right? And that's what I mean by somebody who's not gifted in that area. But of course, we don't have a choice because Jesus came to serve. And when I look at these guys, and when I look at others of you as well, I'm often convicted with the fact that I'm really good at doing what I enjoy doing. Yeah? And I struggle often to do what needs to be done. And so, guys, whatever they say this morning, if you absorb their spirit, there'll be an impartation of something which will actually be transformative for your life, as it has been for mine. Okay? That's the explanation of the panel.
Interesting. And if I looked at her and said, we're constantly sleeping. Okay. Said half what I was going to say, so I'm going to have to just stop. I'm so on your knees, you want to sit here for a bit. I'm just for work. David, he's not come as a sloth, right? He's in his work clothes as well. I'm not very good at those.
All his good clothes with a suitcase.
Yeah. He's had a holiday and everything. He's got his things in a suitcase. True. But I don't tend to serve the same way David does. David does sort of hard graft. But work boots really are about doing graft. Now, I've been a sixth form shooter for a long, long time. And this time of year, you do UCAS forms. Those of you not UCAS forms are... It's University and Colleges Application Scheme, right, okay, and you have to do references for them. And in all that time, I have never, ever had an application for the role of servant. It's not up there as one of the first choices. I've done architecture, medicine, engineering, arts, film studies, drama school, you know, I've done all sorts of references. Never, ever has there been an application for the job of servant. Even as I was down working PSHE, which is like it's personal, social and health education. You do careers and things. I'm making it much a bit off because
it's actually bending.
Sorry, I do tend to sit on. That's too loud.
No, you want to see any of the table flexing.
Even when it was like down there, and he did these. There was this computer generated thing called Jigcal that, if you're about 30, you may have remembered sort of thing, where you went on and it churned out suitable. Never, ever. And as David said, as a church, we serve a lot. It was really interesting last week where we had so many visitors to see how people sort of stepped up to the mark. I saw Tina, who wasn't on refreshments, in there helping with refreshments. I saw people were stepping up and talking to people they didn't know and visitors and things like that. And we are a church that... does take on the role of servant and serving other people. All the stuff with Woodlands is about serving. But I think we have to think about the fact that Philippians 2:7 is a real challenge to us. It starts, but he gave up his place with God and made himself nothing. He was born to be a man and became a servant. That's a real challenge for us on the old discipleship front, because if we're becoming more Christ-like, we have to take on servanthood. It's not a choice. We have to be a servant as well. And David's got a story about his parents.
Well, a lot of you will know that my parents were missionaries in Brazil for 10 years, working with Wycliffe Bible Translators. Some of you may have been here when they came and Dave interviewed them and things. But if you actually look at their life and the way they went into that, my mum became a Christian when she was at university. She was studying mathematics. And during that time, she found out about Wycliffe and really felt she had a call to Brazil and to this particular tribe of Amazon Indians. And one of the things she needed to do to become a missionary and to work for Wycliffe was actually take on a profession. And the quickest way with a maths degree that she could get a profession is to become a teacher. So she immediately did a teacher training and became a teacher. I think if you spoke to her, her real love would have been to be an aircraft designer. Mm-hmm. And in those days, they didn't push women in engineering and all that, but she would have really loved to have done that, if she could have done. But she felt she was called to do that. My dad met my mum, and at the time, he was a civil engineer. He was working for Halcro, who were a big civil engineering company. He'd been building the tunnel under the Clyde. He was doing very, very well in his career. They decided they quite liked each other and began to get together, and he began to feel as well he had a call to Brazil. So and the way things worked in those days, he had to convince Wycliffe that he wanted to go to Brazil because he had a true calling from God and not just because he wanted to follow my mum there. He managed to do that, and so at the age of 32, they went out to Brazil. My dad had given up his job, and they then work as missionaries over there. I think they've got one French O-level between them. They're not linguists, a missionary organisation. They're working with Wycliffe. He's primarily there to work with people who are speaking languages that aren't written down and who haven't got the Bible in their own language. And the whole work is about learning the language, writing it down, teaching the Indians to read it, translating the Bible, and giving them the Bible in their own language. They also had to learn to speak Portuguese, because the Brazilians speak Portuguese, and certainly when the missionaries were communicating by shortwave radio between the Indian village and where the missionary base was and things, just to say how they were, the Brazilians insisted they spoke in Portuguese so they couldn't speak in a language where they couldn't understand them. And so it was important they did that. So being non-linguists, they were there to serve God, to do what he called them to do, and they worked very hard at that. After being out there 10 years, the Brazilian government decided they didn't want the missionaries with the Indians anymore, and so they could no longer go into the Indian villages. And my parents very quickly decided to come back to the UK. This was May 78, came back. And they felt it was right then to stop being missionaries and to pick up their lives in the UK where they'd left off. And I really do, I don't actually know how they felt then. They've seen some amazing things happen. They've seen a whole tribe of Indians become Christians. We went in to visit the village at one point and to be there for a period where we're working with the Indians. And we happened to look in a house where we used to live. We moved into another house. And there were sort of benches laid out in it. Oh, that's strange. And we spoke to somebody and said, if they started a school or something, we see the benches. And said, oh, no, that's where the Indians meet for their church. And totally outside of, well, not outside of what my parents had been doing, but another tribe of Indians who had become Christians had converted a couple of the Indians from our tribe, and they'd converted the rest of the tribe. And we saw a complete transformation in some of their attitudes to us and all of that kind of thing. So they've seen all of that, but they'd struggled with learning the language, teaching the language. Wycliffe were actually saying they were working too slowly, and then the Brazilian government said no longer can you go to the Indians. So they came back to the UK, and at that point I really wonder what they felt. You know, we've given up 10 years of life, we're now stopping doing that. My dad was picking up his job where he was at, and I know certainly one interview he went for a job up in Widnes, and they said, well, we think you've been out of civil engineering too long to do this job. How about you take a job at a lower level that we've got available? And I wonder what my parents felt at that point as well. And I know they were concerned about my school. I was 8 at the time, and they actually said to some friends, they said, we were concerned about Dave's schooling, if we ruined it for him. And the friends actually were obviously people of God, because they said, yeah, but think of all the experience he's had. Mm-hmm. So there were all those things. And at the end of it, in the last couple of years, parents found out that the Indians, that tribe of Indians, they haven't had any missionaries go back into them over the whole time since then, since 78. But that tribe of Indians still have a church. They still meet regularly 4 or 5 times a week. They go up onto one of the mountains in their reservation that they've got in the Amazon jungle and pray over the whole reservation for all the other Indians. And so there's a real legacy that they've left there. And I was really pleased that they heard that and things, but back in 78 when they came back, I wonder what they felt and what they thought.
What's that story? Because really it illustrates how the kingdom of God really is upside down to how the world thinks. In the workplace, in society, it's all about being thanked. It's all about getting the next promotion. It's all about being respected for what we do. It's all about the financial reward. The kingdom of God is not like that. It's completely turned the other way around. Jesus said in Mark 10:43, whoever wants to become great among you must serve the rest of you like a servant. Whoever wants to become the first among you must serve all of you like a slave. In the same way, the Son of Man did not come to be saved. He came to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many people. And that's not the way the world thinks. It doesn't think, you know, as I say, I've never had a child apply to be a servant. It's not something that's up there as a sort of epitome of, you know, what would be a good thing to do with one's life. It's an upside down way of thinking. It's nice, you know, people say, generally it's nice to be nice and polite to people, right? And be very nice people. In the world. I was always told by my English teacher, I wasn't ever allowed to use the word nice. The only person who could use nice was Jane Austen.
okay? But you know what I mean by sort of nice people, nice, polite, pleasant, etc. But we still have expectation that the people with the right, because they've got the best qualifications, the most money, whatever, will be the top dog, as it were. And the way that God and Jesus wants us to think about the kingdom is the other way around. It's bottom up. Jesus said we should be servants too. He came to be a servant, we should be servants too. And all this thing about discipleship, about becoming more like Jesus, is really, it's a burden and it's a joy that's laid on us, that we should be servants too. I think sometimes we approach it a bit like a bitter pill. We have the attitude, right, okay, I'm Christian, I'm supposed to serve, I will serve through gritted teeth, etc. You know what I mean? Like that. Or that I'll serve because it's my way of paying Jesus back for the things that he's done for me. It's not that I really want to, but God's done all this stuff for me, all these sorts of things, and therefore I suppose I ought to serve. And that's sometimes how we can be. And, you know, I hold my hand up. There are some times where I think, but then they just disprove me. I love our little group of teens, right? I didn't think I would, because I do go into teacher mode. It's very easy for me to tip over into teacher mode and give them a look, etc. Because I've got expectations about how they behave and things like that. But they are a delight to have. They really are delightful. And I'm sorry all of you that haven't wanted to do them, because you're missing out, okay? And I think even Joe's really enjoying himself. He's never worked with kids that young, really. He usually goes in sort of like 10 and 11, 14, 15, 16. So I think even it's quite a steep learning curve for him, but I think he is really enjoying it. But being a servant is about what it's like to be like God. For serving grudgingly, or only in the areas where we want to, we're just so missing the point about what the heart of serving is. Yeah, there's some physical constraints, okay? We're not going to ask Mary to lead the dancing. I'll try, actually, I've seen her up dancing, but you know what I mean. There are some physical constraints, and there are some things you can't do. But that's not really what God requires of us. It's the servant heart of where there's a need and just getting on with the graft and getting on with the job. And I was thinking about what serving is, because sometimes serving, it's not about being a doormat, right? It's not at being everybody's beck and call. That's not what having a servant heart is. It's about paying attention to the needs of others. Okay, so sometimes their need actually is not to have you pander to their need, right? To actually meet somebody in their need is to actually make them to confront what it is that's a problem. But sometimes it is just to do something for somebody, or to do a job for them, or to just be there and listen to them. So it's not always about doing physical graft. Sometimes it's about the spiritual support, or just being there for them. Serving is obeying God-given authorities, even if it's inconvenient. That's something I sometimes struggle with. Right? I don't like being told. Right? I like being asked nicely, but being told to do that because, you know, that's, they've got the authority. But it's same in school. If I'm really just told blandly, my instinct just go, not this side of hell freezing over, etc. And I go, no, that's not the right attitude. You know, I'm a team player, I'm part of the team, etc. sort of thing. It may be taking up a role because there's a need. This is very hard. I said it actually to David on the phone last night, we were talking about it. Very hard to talk about servant, because you 10 times end up saying to blowing your own trumpet, and that's not really the heart that I want to come over. But I know there are areas where I have done things just because they need doing, not because I thought I was the best person or the most gifted, but actually you needed a body in that. I got my first job because of need. Right? I was doing maternity leave when I moved down here, and in the interview, you know, you're supposed to impress everybody. They said, what do you think you'll bring to this post if you get it? I said, I'll be a body in place, doing stuff, etc., from wherever it comes and wherever it comes back. And they went, right, and I got the job. Because basically, that's actually what they wanted. They just wanted somebody who would keep the wheels turning in that place for 3 months while the turn slip was going on, etc. I'm still there. Okay, so obviously I did quite well at that. Sometimes it's also giving up a role. Okay, when the time has come. And that's sometimes something we find really hard to give up something that we've been doing or we feel God's called us to, but God's actually now saying, actually, no, I want you to move on from that. That's the time for that thing has come to an end, and now I want you to move on to something else. And sometimes we find that difficult because we get very comfortable in the roles sometimes, you know, because we know how to do it, we know the stuff, etc. I mean, God asks us to move on. Sometimes we can go, no, I don't really want to move on because that's me's old new set of things I've got to find out and know about. No, it's right, the small children are playing, so it's one of those noise coming through that hall. Another thing, just asking people, this is a bit I'm not very good with serving. I'm very good at telling people where I am. I'm not very good at asking people how they are. Right? That's actually something I actually have to remember to do. I'm such a steamroller sort of person. There are times when I ring people up and I've talked to them about something, I have to ring them back and go, have I just steamrollered you? Right? You tell me if I just steamrollered you, because I'm very good at steamrollering. I'm not a nice, soft, fluffy sort of person, as you know, most of you know me well. And I can steamroller first, and then I think, oh, no, I think I've just, you know, really strong-armed somebody into doing something, and I go back. And then they're very gracious, and you go, and they go, no, Carol, gosh, I'm strong-armed. They're thinking, yes, you know. Serving's important because God calls us to be servants. That's, you know, the big thing. And God cares passionately about us, and God cares passionately about the people we know. And one of the easiest ways to be Jesus to the people we know is to serve them. And sometimes that isn't easy because they've got more money, more time, or whatever, etc. than you. You think they don't actually need my help, but sometimes they do need your help. And one of the ways that we can actually affect our relationships and the people that we know and our sphere of influence is by serving them faithfully. I do know that I've got a reputation. There's two things in school that are guiding lights for me. I always do, absolutely, on time, the bits of my jobs that affect other people. If it's stopping anybody else doing their bit of their job, then I feel I have failed them. And one of the ways I serve my colleagues is by making sure that anything that they need to be able to get on with their job gets done on time. Anything that is my priority that I would quite like to do tends to slide, but that is something that I've always felt in work, it is very important that you do the things and make a priority of the things that other people need to be able to do their job. And I have a reputation, I have two reputations in school. One is that I go when the bell goes, right? I'm not one of these people who hangs around for hours and hours after school trying to impress the head, because our head goes wandering around going, what are you doing here? Because he also likes to go sort of straight away. And the other thing is actually I've got a reputation for being efficient. I'm not efficient, really, but because I all the things that affect other people are done efficiently, I get that reputation. Whereas my desk is always clear. I can't find anything, okay, but it's always clear because I file everything. It's just I have 14 different files with similar names on, and I can't find it, whichever one I've done it. So it's important about serving other people. There's no qualifications for being a servant. You know, you don't take O-level, dating myself, and I have GCSEs in it, or ASs or A2s. But actually, there is one huge qualification. Because if God has called us to himself, he has expectations on us. And one of those is to be like him. Yeah? And if God's called us to him, then he expects us to be like him, and to be like his son, and his son was a servant. And so often, actually not feeling qualified is the actual qualification. Because it says in 2 Corinthians 12:9, my grace is enough for you. When you are weak, my power is made perfect in you. So when you don't feel like doing it, or you don't feel you're up for the job, that's actually where God can move for you. One of the reasons I've really steered away, I have done teams on numerous occasions, I've really steered away from them is because I can work with teams, right? I can talk to teams, I can work with teams, I can get teams to do the things that I want them to do because I'm doing it all the time. It's not any special gifting I have, but it's my job. I can do it professionally, I can get them to do it. And I steer away from that because sometimes I feel that because I can do it, I don't give God room to do other stuff in it because I can just tip over into professional mode. You know, all of us have our professional areas and we feel competent in those, and therefore we feel sometimes that there isn't that. Whereas I'm much more likely to screw it up, but I'm much more likely to rely on God when I do the younger age group. Not the very young ones. You do know that I'm actually banned from creche by them. Which was very devastating, because I'm not very good with very small children, and I do. I think it was the time she came in, and I had all the under threes doing a salt course. Was like, I don't think it's a good idea, Carol. You do creche. So sometimes, you know, and often said there's physical constraints on it. So serving should be about faithfulness. It should be about striving for excellence. Just doing well enough isn't good. It's about doing it well, striving to be excellent. To be happy with the smallest, thankless task. Yeah, I'm quite happy to put away the chairs. I usually put away the chairs. Core team do shut down, but so there's one of us who's finally in charge of the building. And usually, for some reason, almost usually do it in Ian's or. So I always put the chairs away because that's not the easy bit, but physically I can do that, but I can't lift the tables. Yeah, so that's fine. I don't mind doing tables and chairs. And I don't mind standing up and talking. It's you know, as far as me, it's all part of the serving thing. Not a natural talker, although I think it is my gift. My gift is a natural talker. Well, what about the mouth of talking? One of my jobs with serving is at the butt of the jokes as well. It's about stepping up to the mask and ask. And all of these are the marks of somebody who has a servant heart. And I think as a church we do have a servant heart, but I still think there's more that we can do in terms of serving. David's going to come and tell you some more stories.
I have to say, after Ralph did up this morning, I think he perhaps ought to be up rather than me. I put it brilliantly as willing to help his neighbour in that way, and having the guts to actually say to someone, can I pray for you, that's the bit I always need.
Can I just share a little bit more about that? I did pray for him afterwards, obviously, once I
did. Yeah,
and his name's Mr. Cummings, so if you want to pray for him,
yeah,
you can pray for him. That'd be great.
I will do that. Anyway, this week on Monday, I was trying to get Tony to sleep. We were listening, well, actually, I was listening to the PM programme on Radio 4, and he was having to listen along. And they started talking about this 16-year-old in India. He's one of the fortunate ones. He gets to go to school. His parents pay something like £25 a year for him to go to school. That's what you have to pay for school uniform and books and things. And so when school finishes, he then rushes home. When he gets home, he rings the bell, and apparently all the kids from the surrounding area, from his village and the surrounding area, they who aren't able to go to school because their families can't afford it, descend on his house, and he then teaches them the lessons he's had that day. And he started this when he was nine, just a few friends, and it's grown now that he has a school of 800 kids. With 10 or 20 teachers. And I was completely blown away by that. I thought, what a way to serve. What would I have done in that position? I think I'd have probably snuck home and got on my homework. I couldn't afford to do that. They talked to one of the girls who went to his school. She has to work. Her father is disabled. And the job she does brings in something like £3 a month. So what's that, £36 a year? So if you put the two figures together, for about £60 a year, I could send her to school and her family would be better off than what she's earning from her work. And yet, she does her work and then she goes to the school. She wants to become a nurse, and so she puts the time and the effort into it. And that's serving. I was blown away by what I would have done in that position, and also, did I really make the most of my education? I only got third class degree, so I guess I didn't. It's just
you've
just
got a degree.
I did go. As you said earlier, these are my work boots. I've never really been very keen on the steel toe cap boots. I think it goes back to the time when I was in the RAF cadets as a kid, and we went away on camp and they got us up early one morning to do some PT, and we finished with a run around the camp and up some steep hill somewhere. And in those days I used to swim 3-4 hours a week, so I was reasonably fit.
I used to run cross country now and again, so I could run a bit. And as we ran up this hill with these heavy steel toe cap boots on, my legs began to ache. A lot more than I was expecting to ache. A lot more effort than if I'd been running up in a pair of football boots or a pair of trainers. And I think that's a real shows what serving's like. There is an effort, there's an energy that we have to put in to it, and we have to and we'll at times make us ache, and we'll find we've got muscles and places when we don't think we have muscles because they're aching and that sort of thing. But when I work, as long as I'm not somewhere where if I drop something I might just chop my toes off, I only wear any trainers because I like things to be light on my feet. Some of you will recognise my Saxon clothes, I apologise for those, but we used to do woodlands en masse, this is how I dress. It's got a bit more pink paint on for two daughters, and it's in pink, well, it was before I didn't paint them, anyway. so we did that. Carol's talked about serving at work, and I really do believe wherever you are in work, whether you're the CEO, whether you're at the bottom of the pile, whether you're in the middle, our attitude should be to serve at work. We should serve the company that we work for. That's an authority that you might not want to serve. We should serve those who we work for, we should serve those we work with, and we should serve those who work under us. And before I worked for Dayspring, I used to work at the Avon factory on Bumpers Farm in Chippenham. I was the quality manager there, and we were going for an upgrade in our quality accreditation. We nearly failed the audit, and the reason being the auditor found we weren't controlling our production properly. We just have something called a root card, which I said is paper that lists the processes the part should go through. It should be one in every box, and every time the part does a certain process, the operator should write the date and the number of parts and sign it off to send it to the owner properly. And the auditor found boxes without root cards in, he found root cards that weren't filled in properly. And he made it very clear that when he came back in 6 months to audit us again, if we hadn't improved, then things would be would go a lot worse for us. I could have been a quality control manager, stamped my foot, said it was unacceptable, said I was going to walk around the factory at 9 o'clock every morning if I found anything wrong, and stop hold of production until they sorted out to my satisfaction. And I'm sure in 2 to 3 weeks they'd have learned how to avoid me stopping production. But I'm also sure when I stopped walking around the factory in 2 to 3 weeks, things would progress back again. I also tended not to stop production because at the end of the day, if you work in a factory, all of your salaries and wages are paid by parts going out the door. So stopping production tends to be counterproductive. I could have been a quality assurance manager, so I could have said, well, here's the procedure. It's very simple. It's written in good English. You all understand it. Go and do what it says. That's what you're paid to do. Get on with it. And then left it at that. And again, I expect in six months' time, we really would have improved from where we were at. So I sat down with the production manager. I said, look, we've got this problem. We need to resolve it. How can I help you? What can we do? We decided to talk to the actual team leaders of the different production cells to find out what the issues were and why we didn't seem to be doing so well. Turned out some of the root cards were wrong. The production process had changed. The root cards hadn't changed, so we corrected that. Turned out there were some root cards where it listed 3 steps in the process, it all happened in one machine, and the operators didn't really see why they had to write their date, name, and number of parts out 3 times. We were able to combine those into a single step. Turned out in some cases, an operator would take the parts through 3 steps of the operation. In other cases, when we needed the parts quicker, we had 3 operators doing each individual step, and when they did the 3 steps in one go, again, we like to put ditto marks. Just because they couldn't be able to write the date 3 times and so on. It's just perfectly understandable. So we had to proceduralise a way that allowed them to put detail marks to the satisfaction of the manager, so we did that. We also, a couple of guys in my department, every week, at the beginning of every week, would receive all the root cards from the parts we'd shipped in the previous week, and they would go through them all, and any that weren't filled out correctly or had errors on them, they would take back to the production cell, and the team leader would then talk to the person who filled them out. And either correct their working method, you know, in certain terms, no doubt, or sometimes we found that the root cards were wrong again. So within 6 months, we'd improved so much so that we didn't have to do a huge amount of scrubbing for the audit to get us up to the standard we needed to be. The auditor was extremely impressed. Within a year, the guys who were checking the cars every week were saying, look, we're not finding any problems. And, all right, there would be the odd box with absolute coding, there are thousands of boxes of parts in the factory, and that's the nature of the business. But we'd improved such a huge amount. And that was by serving the people and working with them, getting alongside them and doing it. And that's how I tried to do my job as a quality manager, to do that. So that's serving at work. Another is the church actually phoned my lady on Cushion. She wanted a garden, some work done on a garden. She'd heard that we basically do that. And also, because her house was a sort of run of terrace houses, and then the garages were the secretary. She, on her deed, she ran the garages. She had the land there. There was a big hedge growing on it, which was growing over the path, and people were complaining that they couldn't walk down the path and things, and so she wanted something done about the hedge. We weren't really sure what we could do. I went around and did the garden and got chatting to her. It turned out the husband had died when she was 30. She brought up an only daughter on her own, and then when the daughter was 30, the daughter died, and she was incredibly lonely. And we did the garden, and we ran the iron about the hedge, what can we do, whatever. And in the end, I said to her, I said, look, I'll on my way home from work, it's on the way home, I'll stop by, I'll chop down at least one bush in this hedge, because we decided we're going to chop it all the way down to the ground and cut it back. And I'll throw all the bits in the back of my car, and then I'll drive up to the tip, get rid of them, and go home. So I started doing that 2-3 times a week. I'd stop by and knock on the door. Most times she'd come out and chat. She loved chatting. And I must have been, I don't know, a third or a half the way through this hedge, slowly working down it. And I really felt that sort of next day, she'd asked if I was married and had kids and all that. And stuff like that. I really felt the next thing was to invite her to Sunday lunch. So Sue was up for it, so I said, would you like to come to Sunday lunch? And she said, yeah, and they like that. And then the Saturday before she was due to come, she rang me and she said, I can't come to lunch on Sunday. A friend's in hospital and he's going to visit. Would you pop in on the way from church and pick up some presents and look for the kids? So I said, no problem. So I drove up there, I had Isabella in the car with me. I said, you know, just sit there, I'm just going to get these presents. Mm-hmm. And I walked in and knocked on the door, and the neighbours answered the door. And this lady, Joan, had not been helping, was sat in the chair in absolute agony. I think she was in so much pain she probably didn't even recognise. And she, the neighbours had called an ambulance. We had been told it was going to be an hour, 2 hours before it came. And she wanted a friend to help us, so we rooted through some telephone books and ran up a friend. Friend came around and everything. And I sort of began to feel a bit of a spare part because the friend was taking care of issues and things. And in the end, because Isabella was in the front, I said, I'm just going to go. Can I take a phone number so I can find out what happens? So I took the phone number of one of the neighbours, and as I left, the medical response car turned up, and so I thought, well, that's great, things will be switched out. Monday morning in the office I rang, and rang the neighbours and said, how is she in the hospital, can I do this? And they said, well, actually, she died the night before, and she'd had an aneurysm or something, which is why she was in the pain, and she died that Sunday evening. And I built up a relationship with her in serving her. And even now it still hurts. Mm. And I don't know why for that 3 months I served her. I don't feel I needed to preach the gospel to her anymore, but I did. I mean, she knew why we were serving because of the love of Jesus, but I didn't really take her through the step-by-step gospel. I don't feel like it was there. Mm. I do regret that I perhaps didn't pray for her on that Sunday or ask her to pray for her when she was in pain. The reason I was too shy, it was a difficult thing. But I don't know, maybe one day I'll walk down some street in heaven and she'll be walking the other way. Mm. She'll say, ah, that's why I'm here. But we're called to serve, mm. And sometimes it does hurt. I know other people who've served down Williams and have had people who've been serving who've died on the street have found it difficult as well. And it's always a bit of a shock. We've got time for another one, or do you want to wrap up?
One more story.
So, In fact, it can hurt, but we don't know why we're serving things to finish. That's sort of one of the pinch points of wearing boots we're sort of talking about. Another point where it is if you have a real heart to serve, you can, and Carol touched on this, end up doing everything. You know, people say, can you help with this, can you do that, and you end up a bit of a doormat, and then you get very tired, and then you get quite resentful. And you're not called to do that. You're called to serve in God's strength, and He gives us the strength to do that. If you don't like serving, and you don't serve in God's strength, then you get resentful fairly quickly, because you're just doing it all for gritted teeth. When we were working down Woodlands, one Sunday a month, we'd shut down the Sunday morning meeting, for those of you who weren't there, and we'd go en masse down the street and we'd take some of the tips and all of that. And I used to have the fun of planning that, and it was great fun. I really enjoyed it. And during the week before that Sunday, we'd door knock the whole of Woodlands and say, we're here on Sunday, what jobs can we do? Most of you are probably out of the door. And one week, we've due to the door knocking on Wednesday. I got a phone call about 4 o'clock on Wednesday at work. Audi in Germany, who are our biggest customers, said, you must come out, there's a quality problem, we need to talk to you about it. And I had to fly out the next day to Audi. So I rang Sue, I said, I've got to go to Audi tomorrow, I'm leaving early in the morning, come back late in the evening. And she said, you're not door knocking. So I said, oh, of course I am. So I think I'm right to say I stayed on working and getting ready for the meeting until about 7:30. And I went straight down with them. So we did the door knocking. I think we had a cup of tea afterwards and talked about the jobs we'd got and what happened and what people had said. And about 9 o'clock, I got home and had some tea and went to bed. 4:30 in the morning, I was back up again off to Heathrow, first flight out to Germany. Landed in Stuttgart, drove an hour and a half to English out where Audi were. Did the meeting, took my beating, went over, dished out. And then drove back to Stuttgart Airport, dropped the hire car off, and had a bit of time before my flight, so I think I checked in. And then they had a really nice, on the side of the terminal outside, it was summer, nice sunny weather, but they have a really nice little bar that's outside. So I got myself a beer, and I think I got a little breakfast and a roll or something, anyways. And I pulled out all the paperwork from the door knocking and started planning Woodlands. And Philip was not here actually, but I think some of the stuff Philip had written down when she'd been door knocking wasn't clear, so I had to ring her and she said, are you enjoying it? I said, yeah, I'm just playing it. And by the time I caught my plane home, I'd actually planned what we're doing with loans, assigned different people to jobs, knew what kit we needed, and was ringing people that evening and the following evening. I must have got home at 8:30, 9 o'clock, and that kind of thing. And I used to really enjoy that, and I believe that it was a long day, there was a lot of energy needed to do it. But I really do believe that because God was in it and was doing receiving in what He was doing with His strength, that I was able to do that, do the planning for doing a very busy job and things, and got a lot of satisfaction out of it. So anyway, there's some of my stories. I'm sure we've got lots of your own.
Right, I'm going to finish up, mainly because we're running over time, but I did print out a copy of St. Francis of Assisi's prayer about, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. So if you know that you do struggle with serving or anything, I'll leave one here. You can just take one in your own time. You can just read it through as a prayer. There you go. Thank you.